fabulous, a tapestry of excitement and learning for my young imagination. Perhaps my interest in libraries, which I've pursued in the House and Senate, dates from the enormous impact upon me of those early experiences. I've been often asked, going back to those in somewhat later days, what is the book or books that most influenced me in my thinking and career. It is a little known work. I know it well and identify it completely. It is a little known work called by Thomas Buckle, a famous English historian and philosopher of history, called An Introduction to the Civilization of England. As I remember it, it came in four volumes, Buckle was a man of the middle 19th century, apparently was a man of some means, hardly a starving author, and worked from an enormous library with great erudition. He took 30 years to write the introduction, and never got to write the book to which it was an introduction. But the introduction was intended to demonstrate and prove a theory of Buckle's, and that is that history was not happenstance, but was scientific and could be predictable, and that it was based essentially upon the climate and soil as the finite conditioner of the culture and civilization which it nurtured. How I came on Thomas Buckle's book is an interesting proposition, too. In my very early days of working for a living, when I was, say, about 17 years of age, I read a column by a very famous columnist in the Hearst newspapers, then the editor of those of the New York Journal, in which he spoke with great respect and admiration for the concepts of Buckle as embodied in this book. It attracted my attention. I acquired the book or drew it out of the library and read it avidly, indeed read it twice avidly, and it was probably the single greatest contribution to my own thinking and future. Paragraph. Reverting now again to my own background as a child and youth, my brother was admitted to the bar in 1922, when I was already 18 years of age. But prior to that time, he had engaged in a business of collecting bad debts, at which he managed to make a fair living. And as a result of that, as the oldest child, he wanted very much to bring our family out of the Lower East Side, and to bring my father especially out of the terribly hard work and dismal conditions under which he worked, which were obviously bound to shorten his life. Little did my brother know that the sheer shock of the change would shorten his life even more. And so, along about 1917, when I had completed half a term at the Ewart Clinton High School, and incidentally my most disastrous educational experience, as I failed one course completely, algebra. And this is an interesting point. When we finally moved from the Lower East Side, which was to Easton Parkway in Brooklyn, my father remained over in the Lower East Side for about 6 months before he would move. And even then, it was only because he fell ill, and perhaps somewhat attributable to the shock of being semi-separated from my mother. She lived in Brooklyn and ran back and forth to try to tend to his needs and ours as well. In any case, when we got to Brooklyn, I enrolled in the boys' high school in Brooklyn. And in my first term of making up algebra, attained the highest mark I believe I had ever attained in anything in my schooling, 100% in algebra for that term. It is perhaps an indication of my character that I have invariably had a strong reaction to adversity. While not being nearly as effective in respective conditions which may bring it on. My father soon thereafter fell ill, had to be operated on, and was operated on for gallstones. Then moved with us to Brooklyn and abandoned the Lower East Side, but never recovered, and passed away in the summer of 1919, when we had rented a bungalow through my brother's relative success in his business at Arvern. Died peacefully from post-operative infection, literally in the arms of his family. Dear man, with a beautiful smile, the profound comfort of his orthodoxy, but one of the most colossal economic failures known to man. My mother carried on with indomitable spirit, and literally a rock of Gibraltar personality, philosophy which accepted everything, went everywhere, tried to do all that one person could do, even when her eyesight began to fail and her other faculties. Lived to see children, lived to see her children prosper mightily. Indeed, saw me sworn in as a member of the Congress in 1947. I lived to see me married and with two children, and passed away at the age of approximately 79 in the spring of 1954. But before I had been nominated for or even aspired to the office of Attorney General of the State of New York, which occurred in that year. I have developed the situation of these early years, and to which I will add, of course, a good deal of the detail of my career as a lawyer in New York, in the Army, because these are not of record among my papers, and there is really no clue to them except my own recollection. I do not intend, however, in this preliminary draft of what the book of my memoirs will contain, to go into the same kind of detail in respect of later developments. resource available in the record, as I will later describe. Brooklyn was also a new world for me, where I learned to play sandlot baseball and the beginnings of an interest in tennis, which has stayed with me throughout my life. We lived in the Brownsville section of Brooklyn for some 2 years. This was the period of the end of World War One, and I experienced the delirium of the armistice there. It was also the beginning of a certain amount of political orientation by me. I have not told the story as yet in this recording of my relations with my brother, who was a passionate believer in social and economic justice, and who was almost completely member of the family who had literally brought us out of Egypt to wit the Lower East Side, like Moses, who had broken his way into the business world, been educated almost entirely at night beyond the public school level, having had to work during the day in order to advance himself. Of becoming a lawyer, studying at night at Fordham Law School and paying his tuition out of his earnings from the bad debt collection business. This passionate idealism led him into the Socialist Party of Eugene Debs and Norman Thomas, of Morris Hillquit and Sidney Hillman. Because of my devotion to him as a youngster, I followed him in that course and can clearly remember at the age of about 14 or 15 speaking on soapboxes in the Brownsville section of Brooklyn under the auspices of the Socialist Party about the need for social and economic justice, about trade unionism, and about unemployment compensation, welfare, and other concepts associated with the Socialist Party's doctrines as we emerged from the regulation and direction of World War One. The basis for this kind of thinking had been laid on the Lower East Side when I took what are now and have been for so much of my life memorable walks with my brother from the Lower East Side up to what was about the limit of my periphery as a child, 14th Street and 2nd Avenue, through the Yiddish Theater District. And the Intellectuals Cafe District of 2nd Avenue, including the Cafe Royal, which was where we had the privilege of only looking in through the window, as we could never afford to go inside, to see the Jewish journalists and dramatists and actors and other intellectuals in their social moments. Very few, if any, would ever come from Palestine. for unionization was then very strong. And they became enlisted in the union organization movement. And I have seen many occasions on which one or more of our boarders, men and women alike, came home with cracked heads. That is, where they'd felt the policeman's club as a result of trade union organizing activities. And again, this was a very important factor in my early upbringing, which stuck with me. In respect of the social and economic justice which was involved in the trade union movement. Notwithstanding its quite proper claims of having become big business as the years went on, and itself being guilty of monopolistic power, activities which could be construed as against the best national interest in terms of protectionism for organized labor's own interest, there still survived in me the deep feeling that the revolution was by no means complete. In terms of the working man, which trade unionism represented, and that the difficulty was with dealing with the excesses in the exercise of intra-union power, far more than fear of the utilization by the working men democratically organized of their working power in respect of the national interest. Our paragraph. I think it is fair to say that the individual who had the greatest influence on my life was my brother. He was considerably older than I was. His generation was much more congenial to mine in terms of its orientation to our country, and hence he really was both a parent and a brother. My mother had two girls intervening between my brother and myself as I was the youngest, and they had died as infants, so that the filial relation was a very strong one between my brother and myself. And I followed him into the law practice, to which he was admitted in 1922 because of the difficulties which he had in attaining the necessary education High School to the George Washington High School. And that was about the golden year of my life. I spent 1 year there as I completed the total high school course in 3.5 years. And I almost immediately became prominent in students' affairs, was almost immediately elected president of my class, carried a great deal of the responsibility of the student body for the relief, for their contribution to the post-World War I relief activities. Because the George Washington High School was located in what was almost the country then, in Inwood, just beyond Washington Heights, with lots of playing fields and playing opportunity, I really acquired my taste for athletics and especially for tennis at the George Washington High School. I had tried out for the swimming team at Boys High, but again, the jostling and the competition not left me very happy. Though I did acquire swimming skills, which have stayed with me throughout my life. But at the George Washington High School, I really relaxed and unfolded. It was a co-educational high school. And it was the first place that I really learned about girls, and a happy relation to them. And altogether, it really prepared me for manhood in a most unparalleled way in terms of community spirit, student leadership, dedication to student activities, cultural enlightenment, and a much more congenial attitude toward life and way of living than I had ever known before. Following my graduation from high school in February of 1920, the economic situation began to worsen. It will be remembered that we had a very serious depression in the early 20s. Things began to go badly for my brother, who was then supporting the family, and it was very essential that I go to work. My first job, which my brother had led me to because he was collecting bad debts for the firm in question, was selling lithographic stones and lithographic inks and other supplies by the Santa Fe the Lithostone Company, then located at 32 Green Street in Manhattan, now the Soho District of Manhattan. And my area of sales was to be from New York City, including some activities, sales activities in New York City, to blank Virginia. I did not do badly at this effort, earning something in the area of $85 to $90 per week in commissions and salary, and I pursued it for about 2 years. You cannot imagine the loneliness of a young person like myself, who was not given to the pleasures of being a traveling salesman, or perhaps not old enough to really appreciate them. And was more of a student, and an intellectual in cities like Philadelphia and Washington. Washington, D.C. in those days, Richmond, Virginia. The nights were long, very long. The days, while busy, were not satisfying in the sense that would satisfy me. Generally speaking, a very hard-working time in my life, relieved only by the pleasures of returning to New York and the warmth and love of the family. This element of work was succeeded by my, during this time, I was also cramming for the necessary educational qualification to enter law school. By dint of this kind of cramming, and through the good offices of Dean Blank of New York University, I was admitted to law school, notwithstanding that I had no college degree, though some college courses. As a way in which to support myself, I went into the same business that my brother had been in, to wit, the debt collection business. This time with a partner who had been found by my brother, a very colorful southerner. That lasted only about a year, and I then joined my brother as a law clerk, as he had then begun to practice law, and continued this clerkship through my completion of the law course in 1927. In 1926, passage of the New York bar, the ensuing year of clerkship, which was required at that time of a non-college graduate who would of a graduate who did not have a degree other than his law degree. And was admitted to the bar myself in June of 1927. At that time, I undertook a journey through the small savings which I had, supplemented by what my brother could give me, 4 months through the countries of Europe, which was literally the high point of my life up to then. I attribute my subsequent interest in foreign affairs, which drew me into World War II, and has been a dominant aspect of my public life since 1946, to this trip. And I have a body of letters which dates from that trip, which is bound in a volume, and should be some of which, quotations from which, can be used in this book to great effect, as it began to indicate the international outlook, which was later to be such a dominant aspect of my public life.